Blinding sun, deceptive moon, and consuming shadows. Many secrets are held beyond the sight of humanity. Wondrous and dangerous, the mysteries of Dearstan leave no one unchanged. The bold crew role players are pleased to welcome you into that perilous liminality between the mundane, the unknown, and the unknowable. Whispers from Beyond is a Mage the Awakening Chronicle following the journey of Emily Tao, played by Craig. I'm Bill, and I will be your storyteller for this dive into the mysteries of Dearstan. So let's go over a couple things that'll happen during that training, because we're going to advance over a good 5 months worth of time during this. Maybe pull out one or two scenes from the middle of it that feel very appropriate and special as well.
Yes, let's do that. Like we talked a little bit offline about some of the like expenditures of like experience and things I wanted to spend things on, but I'm pretty animate about having an explanation at least recorded for everything.
Of course. For starters, you are going to get three rote specialties of being part of the Mysterium. So whenever you're casting a rote spell that you've learned and it uses one of those skills, you gain an extra die. This lets you break the normal cap of somehow if you had five in one of those skills, you could actually add six dice to your rote, when normally you can only add at most a total of five above your base dice pool through the various yantras you would use. Those are investigation, occult, and survival. We mentioned that you were going to buy one more point in mentor, which is a good thing because you wanted it to be a strong, serious mentorship. You're also going to add, as a consequence of your training, get the merit high speech, which is something that you can use as a yantra. It helps you actually be able to start using those words again, like you had when you were in Stygia, and more of them to be able to say your magic out loud in a language that contains no lies. You can't use this with the same kind of fluency you could with Hmong or English, but you can still use it very strongly. This is going to come from a book you were given to an extent, with the challenge of being able to figure out certain parts of that book. How is that going to go for a challenge for Emily? Since as much as he goes hands-on, he also expects you to figure some things out on your own.
Right.
And then come back to him afterwards.
I've been thinking about the whole high speech thing, and like she could already speak, you know, two languages fairly well. Like English is, she's awesome at. Hmong, she can pass. Is this high speech, like, does it have an alphabet? Is it phonetic? Anything like that?
It's kind of metaphonetic. It has a lot of symbols to it, but the symbols to it and the letters to it can hide among other languages, which is a very strange thing.
Funny you should say that.
And even more than that, people who are not mages or sleepwalkers, the special individuals who can safely see magic without it kind of being hidden by the quiescence of sleep to them, are the only ones who can even potentially hear it at all. Mages can hear it, and some sleepwalkers can hear it.
So, funny you should say it hides amongst other languages, because I was thinking, even if it didn't, Che can start using her mage name when talking about mage things, is kind of reaching back into her own background, and maybe, like, I'm thinking, like, I'm not sure if, like, spell books are a thing, but, like, I feel like she went, like, looked at all, like, all her school books and, like, all her notes for classes and realized, like, a spider bomb notebook just does not feel appropriate to be writing magic in. So she probably got, like, a really nice pen and some, like, moleskin notebooks or something. And she's kind of like, okay, this is my mage stuff. It looks completely different from my school papers on purpose. So I'm thinking, like, as her first thing, she is going through this high speed like high speech grammar primer that Oathkeeper lent her, and
Yamaduta.
Yamaduta, sorry, that Yamaduta lent her, and she's kind of transcribing in places where she can't quite get it, but she's substituting Hmong characters, like either similar symbols or phonetically in other places. So even if someone did come across it, it just, like, on the East Coast, not a huge Hmong population in this area. So if someone just starts going through her spell book, it would look like she's just like writing out like Hmong characters, and sort of like, even if it's not intentional, she's probably doing this like weird cipher code by having it being phonetic back and forth between the Hmong, English, and high speech.
I think that's a really clever and unique way for her to be able to find it. And I like it. Speaking, if she ever becomes very good with high speech, there are some additional merits that let you use high speech in a more variety, or even hidden among regular language more directly. But you're not there yet. We don't have to worry about that for now.
Yeah.
Just an interesting thought.
Any encryption she's doing right now is purely accidental. Like, she's writing this out, trying to make it make sense to her, and using and borrowing grammar where she can find it. And I think the symbolism and the connection she has with the previous languages and her experience with the wall of chalk actually help her in this. So I'm thinking that initially it's just gobbledygook, but like something just clicks for her, and like she starts writing it in the other characters, and just like she maybe writes something down in Hmong, but when she reads it back, it kind of feels the same way as her name, Lunargent did, or Aperon. It just has that same feeling, and like that makes her feel like she's getting it, even though it just looks like broken Hmong to anyone else looking at the notebook.
That is wonderful and perfect. Another mage who looked at it would probably see that it's high speech in there, but the way that you're encoding it is pretty unique to you, which is good, because frankly, high speech does not look like it even makes sense as writing to a non-mage. They can't recognize it usually.
Does my esteemed mentor have any comments about the system I come up with? Because I think I'm pretty excited to show the notebooks and like explain my thought processes.
He actually seems quite amused by it, and says to you quietly that he actually, when he first had started learning it, often used the Dengvari, I'm pronouncing it wrong, probably, alphabet, which you would recognize is the most common one used for Hindi and Sanskrit a lot of the time in modern India.
Jay has a huge smile when he says that. Like I did something accidentally that's like my new mentor would approve of, like that. She's very happy about that.
Yeah, he says it's a very good stepping stone on your way to being able to master it with greater fluency.
Excellent.
Then he gives you the challenge to look further into that book and tells you it's also a grimoire. There is a single spell hidden within its pages, and more than the longer one rituals I've been helping you work with, this is something that is both very practical and is a spell that you'll be able to use with much greater fluency of true rote casting. Once you've found it, come back and I will help you truly master it.
So I know what rote I picked. How does Che pull it out? I'm not sure if it's like a brute force or like maybe she had a copy of the entire book like a couple times and filled several moleskins on a bookshelf before she gets it, or if there's like some sort of skill, or maybe she's supposed to like look at it under mage sight. I think she's going to try the mage sights to see if that like shows anything.
The mage sight is actually a very good solution to this, using a combination of the mage sight and the fact that you both have some academic and occult knowledge already going. You are able to find that there is definitely that rope we have mentioned hidden in here. Would you like to talk about it, or would you like me to actually read it out of the book politely for everybody?
Well, I'll say I picked the one called, where was it? I just had my notes up. Where'd it go? I picked remote control under matter one. If you have it open and would like to read it, that'd be great.
I do, in fact, have it open. All right. With the commanding power of Stygian, the subject can control any mechanical object, making it fulfill its function. She might flip a light switch, cause an industrial press to slam downward, or shift a car into gear. Anything within the bounds of a single instant action and which the subject device is capable of performing is fair game. Should the action require a skill roll, treat the spell's potency as its successes. And it has one nifty plus one reach option built into it. Like we went over in the little primer session, reach gives you various ways to expand what a spell can do. And the plus one reach option for that is that the subject can perform more complicated tasks while controlling the object, like an extended action or maintaining continuous control of an object as long as the spell's duration lasts. Now, because this is a one dot rote, and because you are learning it as a rote, in fact, Shay is able to cast this spell as a master. So she has a 5 reach on it when normally she would have only 1, because she has 1 in matter. During this, I almost forgot, you also technically gain 1 more dot in occult, because you get a dot in occult as part of your mage basic training. And I shouldn't forget to hand you that. Out of your specialty and so on, this bro is probably going to be using either occult or investigation as its relevant skill. I would suggest that occult makes more sense, because it's the symbols behind why various machines will do what they can do, not based on, you know, investigating each machine itself as you go along. But if you think it's going to be more fitting for Shay to have learned a rote based on having to examine things in a sense to determine what they truly do, you can go with investigation instead. What do you think will fit better?
So it's the same score for me either way. So that's
it. Is it's flavor.
Yeah. But the fact that my specialty in occult is Hmong culture, and I learned this by basically deconstructing a couple languages, I think that kind of makes sense.
All right, let's go with it then. I'm flexible and fair on these things.
Like, I feel like investigation is like the gimme, but like the fact that routes basically can be learned based on whatever the caster came up with at that time, I feel like this is like, it's just too cool not to have it be something weird.
And to be fair, it was also in a language primer too, so that fits a lot more as well.
Yeah, so
it fits really well.
So a little background, I just like, I picked this one because A, it sounded really fun, and it might be something that someone might teach me without a whole lot of experience. Cause like worst thing that I do is turn out the lights or something. Whereas like, you know, calling up dead people or some other like spells you could pick, like seem dangerous and doesn't seem like the sort of thing you teach someone after like only a couple of weeks or months of being a mage. And also I thought it'd just be really cool to like, part of our concept is being like a rideshare driver, being able to, oh, someone's like riding really fast with in a car at me. Maybe I'll like use this route to push the pull up on their e-brake so I can get away faster. I don't know. Just sounded really like a cool idea.
Yeah, or you could literally just shift their car into neutral.
Yeah. E-brake seems like a more immediate thing, like a jerk reaction sort of thing. Shifting to neutral is like at least two steps.
Depends on the car also, if it's a manual versus not. It's a lot of it would be a decision based on what you think is safest at the time, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I picked that one.
Yeah. I do think it's a good choice now. I did then as well. I'm not backing down on that decision. But you will have, of course, spent a bunch of time practicing other basic spells. It's not going to be the only bit of magic you've done.
No.
But it is going to be the piece of magic that you can do most quickly.
No, but I think there's like a whole like weekend where I don't touch a TV remote the entire weekend when I'm like kind of in my own room or something. At least when, you know, Jessica's not watching, or like I'll turn the lights on and off using my magic just to like practice doing it. I'm just so excited I could do this one little thing.
And the other big important one for you to have chosen during this period of training was your praxis. Now, remember we mentioned this, it's a single effect that you've learned how to do really well, so much that you get an exceptional success with 3 successes on it instead of with 5 successes on it. And generally it's not a rote that you have, but it can be.
I don't remember what I picked for my praxis or what it could be. Was this my yantra or my
my tool? Low magical tools on the second page. This was the tiny bit of homework.
Was this my kind of aura thing?
No. This is just like one more spell that you found out that you're naturally very good at and had a knack with.
I don't remember this being an ask. Let's pick one.
You want me to go through the death ones really quickly because you have a matter rote?
Yes. What page am I looking on?
On the second edition book, 128 is where that starts.
All right. And should I be picking one dot or two dots or?
Oh, either is fine.
So we talked about needing to craft my implement by casting the same spell over and over on it. Would this be like that spell, maybe?
Technically, the spell you need to be able to cast is either a Death 3 or a Matter 3 spell, and you don't have 3 in anything yet.
Oh, okay.
You would be able to help with the spell, but it's not one that you would be able to cast directly.
Okay.
My thought is that you might want to either go with a Veiling spell, because Whisper and Hidden Things go together, for a shielding spell. So thoughts I might suggest are Suppress Aura, which would let you hide your magical nimbus, for example, very useful for stealthiness, or Suppress Life, which literally lets you fake you're dead, even to scientific instruments.
That does sound incredibly creepy and useful. We should definitely pick that one.
There's a third one I almost forgot. Without a Trace is a really interesting one as well. It basically kills the traces of yourself you leave behind when you go somewhere. So like, you don't leave behind dead skin or footprints or fingerprints or stuff like that. Forensic doesn't find you, and supernatural means would be needed to detect that you've gone through a place.
Oh, that sounds very useful because like the whole idea is like I have this image of my aura being like a whispering wind, and maybe that kind of like there's this shadowy whispery wind that floods through when I do this spell, and it kind of just removes traces of me.
Yeah, and especially if you cast it with a longer duration, it can last for a while, and you can just be in stealth mode.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't give you a bonus to stealth. It just gives you a bonus to being like track or stuff like that. But it's still really useful. And it defeats forensics, basically.
Yeah, because the last thing I want to do is like get a murder pinned on me or something.
Yeah. The problem, though, is you got to remember, you have to cast it in advance, not after the fact. So then again, this is magic. Even if the rote in the book is meant to be cast in advance, there probably could be a different version created later that could be cast after the effect, but not as a two-dot spell.
Okay. So
like this clean up the scene spell, you know?
Yeah. So this is, I know I'm going to be going into an area. I don't want to be leaving stuff behind. Without a trace, death two. Excellent.
Awesome. And shall we take our small break around now?
Sure, that sounds good.
All right. You've gotten your two bits of magic that you've started to master both in different ways, which is very good and respectable progress. Now let's get to one last thing, which is very important. The tools of the trade that you're using. Now, we don't have to go through all of the five symbols in advance that you're going to have as primary tools, though it's good to think about them. But one of them is your most important tool, your dedicated magical implement, which, among other things, helps you resist paradox when you are reaching too far and could be pulling it down. In one of your earlier lessons, after you've been taught about the various tools, you are given the special piece of homework to look for one that will truly call to you, that can be made into an extension of yourself. What kinds of things is Emily going to bring back after getting that bit of homework?
So Che feels like she should have something very personal to her, and full of symbolism. And I'm pretty sure that her mentor gave her like this whole like list of, you know, like the list for the book or whatever. Things that, you know, are exceptionally good for Moros. And I basically decided that Emily's father was a mechanic in the army, and had always had a bunch of tools lying around the house or in garage when they were young. And despite the fact that like they moved out east after her father passed, like they still made the trip because you don't get rid of good tools or whatever. So the Moros tend to use like hammers or something. So I'm thinking that Che was like just going around the house, like her mother's home, and just kind of raiding the garage and like the garden tool shed or whatever, and just trying to find something like a tool that seemed personable, something that looked mundane, and something that's not going to like stand out like as something like very magey, like something she could just chuck in the back of her like the trunk of her car, and she gets pulled over and searched. It's not going to look weird. So I think she decides on her father's old lead hammer, which I looked up are very good for making like striking things without damaging the thing that they're strike, because it's a softer kind of metal than like a steel hammer would be. So I think she has her father's lead hammer, like hammers, lead, and she kind of found it in the garden. Maybe her mother was using it to like kill like a pest or something, or dig out some dirt or something, and just like left it in the garden, in the flower bed or something. So she pulls it out. It's all caked in dirt, has some like a rusty spot on it that looks like a moth. And she's just like checking all the boxes for symbolism on this one. And when Yamaduda basically asks her like, hey, bring me a tool that will work, she like brings like this almost like a carpet bag type tool bag with a bunch of tools in it, but pulls out the hammer and is like, I feel like this is something that is quite personable to me, and it's practical and looks like not magic-y at a glance.
He's actually going to go over with you the magic on it to determine its composition too, because that is a basic matter spell that you are more than capable of doing at this point. And it's going to reveal itself to be lead with some impurities of tin, actually, which makes him smile. And he says, this could be very useful for you indeed. That isn't rust. It's a different metal in it. This was not made in the fanciest of factories. In fact, it's not very new at all. But in your hands, these are very good symbols. And we can make it something more. You will use this in every spell you do, every single ritual for the next month. And you will do at least one thing with it a day as well. And then, during this month, we will also make it perfect.
And that makes Chait pretty happy and probably pleased that she didn't pick something awkward and heavy, like a hammer, something she could actually hold in a hand and looks normal. When Yamaduta says she has to do something with it every day, she's not the most like mechanically inclined person, but the fact that she does have like the matter mage sight, so I think like she's like, oh, my dad used it working on the car. I don't see the point in just hitting my car with it, but turning on the mage sight, she's probably able to like see like tiny imperfections on like the muffler or whatever, or like maybe, oh, even just wrapping it on a drive shaft and knocking some rust off, that is improving probably both the hammer magically as well as the car physically. So I don't know, I think she's gonna be spending this month working on a car based off of what she learns by watching like YouTube videos.
I think that's kind of fun and kind of fitting at the same time. Matter definitely gives you a greater understanding. And this one, for the kinds of spells it's very suited with, as a hammer, let's say probably looks like a slightly unusual ball peen hammer. So it has a rounded side and a flat side, because I don't think it would probably fit as well as like a micro sledge or something like that for the use you decide
mention yeah.
it with. Does it sound about right to you?
Yeah, something like someone with really tiny wrists could probably handle.
Yeah, so it's a relatively small thing used for probably more delicate work. It counts as potentially more than one kind of tool. As a weapon, it can be used for anything that needs to break, but it could also, as an obvious mending tool, be used for any kind of magic that involves shaping or reforming things. And as it's also a rod, because it's a straight thing, it's very useful for singling out individual things and bossing them around or commanding them as a symbol of authority, you know?
Yeah, plus like medieval maces were like a symbol, like a status symbol, like a symbol of their office, also something to really crack someone's head with. I'm not expecting like Chait to go full old boy on people, but you have that in your passenger seat, no one's going to try to rob you.
Right. And the other couple symbols besides rods and weapons, don't forget, is mirrors, cups, and coins. Coins are usually the ones representing from wealth and repair. But given the uniqueness of what this is, considering it's a mechanics hammer, you can also kind of substitute it in that kind of a symbol as well. And you could even make use of it as the reflectiveness of a mirror if you really needed to, instead of having something else reflective, but it would not substitute in for anything that's a cup. So it would be really useful for, healing for perception or gathering kinds of magic.
Yeah, I mean, it was something that my father used as an implement to earn a living, so that symbolism holds up. I'll admit it's something that'd be difficult to drink out of, but...
Yeah, you can use it for a lot of symbols, but not everything, but that's fine. Very few things are truly universal symbols, as you are learning a lot about symbols. All right, so over the course of this month, he's also going to be meeting with you almost every day for a bit of time in the evening. And you're going to be helping him cast a single death effect that's above your current level of understanding. But he says that one day you should be able to reach it. And like basic concepts are not impossible for you to wrap your head around, but they are more advanced than you know. It is a death tree effect. And what that is doing is it's temporarily sending your hammer into twilight and then back into the real world. Now, technically, you could do this over the course of 3 days because it takes 30 passes to do so. And you can do no more than 10 passes in a single rotation of the sun safely. But he makes you take your time and do it once per day for the slightly more than a lunar month involved to perfect the metals in it permanently in a way that can't be dispelled. So the lead becomes Aperon. And the tin becomes, I'm going to pronounce this slightly wrong, unfortunately, but that's just me, Cassiterum. And that's going to give your hammer several special qualities. And I believe that this was what you had said you would be very willing to spend that other experience point on.
Absolutely. This is like one of the few mage words of high speech that Craig remembers. So like, I like making it kind of mesh and work. So yeah, this is where my other XP would go towards.
Yeah, the book puts this as a 2-dot thing, but I'm only going to charge you for 1 because frankly, it's something that can be done with time without even spending an experience point by a mage who has the spells. So it doesn't seem fair for me to, you know, overcharge you for something that you'll be able to learn if you buy a single additional point in depth. But let's go over the really cool benefits that means your hammer has for you. And they are genuinely cool. So the Cassiterum that makes up the moth in it gives you some really nice benefits. The moth is going to always look glossy, almost like wet level of shininess to it, and be very white, whiter than normal tin, which is just so shiny and almost silvery and hard to, you know, distinguish from other metals by somebody who doesn't have a studied eye for the thing to begin with. And the lead will become Aperon, which will take on almost a slightly bluish color, which very few people actually see lead that hasn't been oxidized before, because it oxidizes so quickly and just creates a very thin film over it once it's been cast. From experience, I know this one. It can happen over a few days, even if it's not an alloy of some sort. So the Cassiterum is associated with Stygia and the Primal Wild, and it has special power against spirits. When you're using, and ghosts for that matter, when you're using it to summon or control or such like that, you get 2 extra dice on those magical effects, because it has power in that such sense. And if a spirit or a ghost touches your tool or is struck by it, it drains essence from them 1 per turn, which is a very good way of really disincentivizing them from causing you trouble.
So I could just turn my death eyes on, see a ghost, and go, "Back, you fool!" And if I just touch them once, that's going to be probably actually don't even need to touch them. They could probably sense the bad.
Yeah, they'll be uncomfortable to begin with, and then you touch them and oh, it burns.
This is totally like giving a chimpanzee an AK-47, and the fact that you don't need to be very proficient at something to do a lot of damage, even accidentally. So I, you know, make it. it makes Chain feel safe.
Yeah, and the pin in it alone, if it was a blade instead, can be sharp enough to cut through diamonds and such. It's extremely hard as a metal. It's the second hardest supernatural metal. But we'll worry about the hardest one later if you ever work with it, which you probably will sooner or later if you focus a little more on the matter side of things, or even just start perfecting things with your death powers later on. The Acheron is, however, also very interesting and especially fits well for your initial work with it. Acheron gives you +2 dice whenever you're using it as a yantra related to, you know, reshaping things or tool use or crafting or stuff like that. So if you start to get more into that kind of matter magic, this is also really powerful for that. But better than that is the other Acheron side effect. It gives you 8 again on rolls for crafting and tool use on it, basically. So you're rerolling all successes every time you get a success when you use this as a tool.
So fixing my car over the course of a month, like, did I make it less crappy?
You have done literally as much as you can do to make your car a better car. Even with your
very limited, knowledge.
Traps knowledge, but you do have a dot, so you're not going to be penalized on it.
Mm-hmm.
As much as you can do without buying more components, unless you think you're actually going to have bought some new components as well here and there. You'll have done as much as is humanly and supernaturally possible to make your car a better conditioned car.
I don't know. I think Emily could justify, like, to anyone watching, like, hey, I'm a rideshare driver. This is something I should probably know how to do. And it might not look odd for her to be fixing up a car on the pretense of, hey, I'm a college student. I don't know what I'm doing, but this is way cheaper. I have time. I don't have a whole lot of money to send it to a mechanic. So it's not like she needs to, like, feign interest in cars. Like her dad was a mechanic. I don't know. Maybe she feels, you know, closer to him when working on cars or something. But,
well, let's just say that in your dad's stuff that was kept in the garage, there were more than a couple books on different cars. It turns out that each car, motorcycle, vehicle, etc., has a service guide available to mechanics for the different ways to fix it and keep it running. And your dad might have had one that worked for a similar model to this one, or mm-hmm. Is this a hand-me-down car?
Oh, it's definitely, she definitely bought it used.
Something similar then in a book, yeah. Which helps out as well.
Yeah, and like anything different, she probably could download the updated handbook nowadays.
Yeah, it turns out they're not that expensive to buy if the model is still in use too online.
Yeah, it's like what, 30-50 bucks tops?
When I looked for my motorcycle, it turned out the service manual for that model was like 130 sometimes on eBay.
Yeah.
But not unaffordable even for a rideshare driver, just not casual money either necessarily.
Yeah. Either way, it's not a huge investment for me to get between YouTube and my dad's books and downloading a manual, like, to teach myself a little bit to justify that dot and crafts.
Yeah. So you're definitely going to be able to do that. And using the hammer to help you out, especially as it grows more and more perfected over the course of the month and your various working on matter magic and even death magic to see what's decaying and falling apart on it to an extent, because both turn out to be useful in repair in different ways.
Yeah,
you're able to make real progress.
My mom totally used it to kill vermin in the garden before, so it has that taint on it.
Oh yeah, but no, I was meaning you could even use death magic to see where is the decay in this car. Oh, it's that component. Matter magic. How do I fix this decay?
Yeah, I probably like practice like one eye open, one eye closed, switching back and forth between the magis. Probably gets me dizzy after a while, but
yeah. Even worse when you try and both at the same time, but you're capable.
What does that look like when I do one eye, and or would it be one eye each, or just like layer?
Oh no, you see both sets of symbols overlaid and interacting with each other. It's intense.
I just Emily on her back, underneath the car, looking up at it, like, what does even look like?
Like, well, to an extent, you're not going to know everything without doing any of the one dot knowledge spells, but you're going to see to an extent that pieces of the car tell you where they're broken, or how they're broken, or how they're aging and damaged, and they tell you what they're good for and what they do as well. The brakes tell you that they stop things. The radiator tells you that it's good for making sure that the engine doesn't get too hot. The gas line tells you that it is a gas line for carrying fuel.
Man, maybe Emily should major in like mechanics or something. Be like a car engineer or mechanic yourself.
Maybe. And the oil filter tells you that it needed to be replaced 1,000 miles ago.
Oh yeah, that's an easy thing she could fix. Not that she needs a hammer to fix it, but yeah.
But your hammer will somehow help on an oil filter when normally they couldn't.
Whoop. It's on perfectly. Yeah, no, I think over the course of a month, like, Emily, like, does a pretty bang-up amateur job at overhauling her car.
I think so as well. I think that all this new bits of dedication and so on really are a little bit impressive to everyone around you. Because you had your different amounts of dedication and perseverance and wanting to succeed before, but now you're even more focused and more driven about it. Does that sound pretty accurate?
Yeah, and I think like even some of her classmates will like now notice that she's much more visible doing things. Like, I'm thinking the community college probably has like an auto body shop for this sort of thing. Or at least has like an agreement with a local garage. That's probably not uncommon.
So you definitely switched into some mechanical stuff for spring semester.
Yeah, I think
you awakened in October and you had time to sign up for your next classes.
Oh man. In
November or December.
Yeah.
Probably as this process was going on.
I got aspirations to sign on a major and make money with magic. So yeah, I think I'm taking some like mechanics or like physical science classes just because like it's clicking for her. But more importantly, she's out there doing stuff and people can see her doing stuff rather than just like her in a room at night or driving around, people not being seen. Basically, she's still wearing ripped up jeans and a community college sweatshirt, but now there's like oil stains on it. But then she probably figures out how to like suck it out with matter or something.
Yeah, matter magic does turn out to be very useful for cleaning clothes.
Yeah. Oh man, like I like none of this was like planned. This is just something we kind of just stumbled into now, which kind of makes me excited about the character, discovering more about her.
Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna say you probably wanna have more in crafts before we can say that she can try and get a job as a mechanic. But I think you're going in definitely the right direction to be able to do that.
Yeah. I probably should at some point buy up crafts sooner than I would normally. But yeah. Especially since we haven't even got to the superhero costume portion yet.
No. Well, you haven't bought anything in your shadow name yet, but because that is a background that you can invest yourself in. But you have been working more and more at understanding what Che is and who you're going to help Che be, as that part of a journey for Emily as well. Let's talk about how that's going. Che, obviously, when you are acting in that capacity, you do not raise your voice. You usually keep it a tiny softer than normal, but you can't go too soft because some things in Mage, like using high speech, require you to state them firmly, even if not loudly.
Yeah, I think Emily's nature is kind of like she's already soft-spoken, but like maybe like she does excited talking when she gets really into things, but I think when she is more in her like mage alter ego, she's going to try to be like, I don't want it to be the point where people have to like make a like awareness or alertness role to hear just a normal conversation, but like kind of play acting into the whole like acting like a different person when she like puts on the mage like persona. Like I think she's trying to keep her lives separate enough, because I guess that's a pretty healthy thing to do.
Certainly does help with the Parker principle of great power, great responsibility, and protect your uncles.
Yeah. So I think she's trying to, despite the fact that it can't help but bleed over into her new interests in mechanics and like being more hands-on with things, the like when she thinks about like her like if she's practicing high speech or something, like she'll be whispering a lot, maybe even to just keep from her roommate overhearing her at first, but maybe just like when she whispers some of the writings she has in her Moleskine notebook, they feel better, they feel more right to her, the Aperon feels more Aperon-y.
All right, which lets us explore a very tiny amount, the Nimbus. Now, the Nimbus has its immediate effects when you cast the magic, and somebody's looking at it especially. The long-term effects, and your signature Nimbus. And all of these end up affecting you and what you do. You remember this a little bit as something we were going into?
Yeah, and I think I'm going to stay with the like whispers and shadowy like wind and clouds and mists sort of thing. Sort of like this, almost like a graveyard in like an old early 90s, late 80s horror movie. They always have like these fog machines or stuff going, and just like this unwholesome mist going around everywhere. It seems corny, but I think it works for the character. But it's obviously not just like dry ice fog. It's like actual like grayish smoke just billowing at your feet. And I think like as an effect, we talked about something that lowering resolve or composure when you see it, and just makes other people feel uneasy and not want to be around it, which I think is a good dichotomy with her typical cheerful personality, to have like this like sense of dread around her that kind of builds up. I'm not sure if that's something she would have to like control, or it just sort of happens when she does magical things. Maybe it kind of picks more when she's doing death things rather than matter things more often, just because of the nature.
Well, it's the kind of thing that would happen literally just as a side effect no matter what, because it, to an extent, it's an extension of who she is. I think we went with composure because it would be unease more than resolve, which would be, you know, like undermining people's determination.
Yeah.
Does that sound correct?
Absolutely. Like they just don't want to be around it, rather than like, I don't want people to see it and just start freaking out by losing composure. I'd rather them just like not wanting to carry through with things that they're planning to do.
Okay, so definitely resolve then. That's fine, and that will fit perfectly.
Where does the Nimbus go on the character sheet?
Second page, right below the little combat thing.
Oh gosh, there it is. Yep.
All right, so let's make sure we broke it down correctly into the three parts. The long-term Nimbus is, let's get to them in reverse order. The signature Nimbus is the bit that identifies you, and that's going to be a whispering fog. That doesn't have your tilts or effects. It's just like the thing that is the feeling of you and gets worked into the magic that you do. Correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, the immediate Nimbus is how it affects people, and a little bit more of that. which is definitely, again, the fog, the whisperingness, but it's also the draining of the resolve, the inability to follow through. And it normally can only be seen when you cast a spell by someone using Mage Sight, but you can spend a point of mana to make it visible and affect everyone who's witnessing you. Sleepers will forget about it afterwards because of quiescence, but supernatural beings will not.
So for long term, does it just mean that, but it's stuck for a while when I do big things, or how does that work?
All right, long term is interesting. That's why I was getting to it in reverse order. Long term basically causes story level effects with coincidences and changes and strange things that will happen simply because you are there and existing. Given that the directions that you're taking, instead of the traditional decay with that's associated with a lot of Moros things, since you're obviously working a lot more towards a repair angle, it's going to be instead that things are probably stretched and the changes of death are almost pushed off instead of happening around you, I think.
I think either that or like a cyclical motion. Maybe the fog swirls, sort of like the whole reincarnation aspect from Stygia, where, you know, I had a trust for Amanda to come back and let me in, or one of her future selves.
Let me read a tiny bit of words out of the book to maybe change the flavor you're thinking of there.
Please, yes.
Moros bring ghastly hauntings, decay, rust, or mechanical breakdown, would be one sentence on it. Then the next paragraph. Important to note that long-term nimbus isn't a controllable force. It's a matter of the strange fractal geometry of the universe itself. Patterns converge around your character. Your character's gnosis determines the general potency of which things happen. Subtle at first, but becoming more obvious at higher levels, like say 6 or something like that. You can have things get really interesting. The higher your wisdom is, the less this kind of spreads around and affects people and things around you. High wisdom, like yours right now, keeps the effects pretty contained. Lower wisdom, it seeps out into the world a lot.
So your suggestion was for it to be, instead of just things breaking down, that they...
Like, it becomes more obvious with you doing your mechanical work that basically well-maintained things around you or things that are taken care of tend to be unusually well-maintained or taken care of, whether or not you're trying to. And things that are neglected tend to be exaggeratedly neglected.
Oh, I like that. Whether or not
you're trying to.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So you can see what my character's attention has been on, or other people's attention's been on.
For people who are very, very close to you or spend a lot of time interacting with you, basically.
So Jessica neglects defragging her computer. Uh-oh. But if she's the type of person who has it on a weekly schedule, it runs pretty well all the time.
Exactly. And more importantly, now that you've been trained to be able to look for them now and then, and you are encouraged to use your death sight at random at this point as part of your training, you realize that ghosts are slightly more likely to be around places where you are on the regular, even if only for short periods of time, because ghosts, as you are taught, cling to where their anchors are, the things that keep them in the world, because if they don't hang out around them too much, it weakens them.
So am I being instructed to basically walk around and go ghost hunting?
You are told to look for ghosts on a regular basis, but not to play around with them unless you find it absolutely necessary so far.
Okay.
Because you need to be aware that they are out there. And as you get more experienced and more powerful, you are certainly going to have to deal with them. So start knowing what to look for in advance and try not to draw too much attention to yourself when you do so.
So walk around town with my hammer in case something happens, and then just randomly turn it on and see if I notice anything different.
Yes. And I'll give you this one for free. You one, you'll notice ghosts every now and then, but they are, even when they're not paying attention to you, and they frequently aren't paying attention to anybody, they are less likely to be close by when your hammer is on you. And I'm pretty sure that it's, since we talked about it not being a giant hammer, but a smaller mechanics hammer, it fits in your purse.
Excellent.
Or backpack, or whichever she uses on the regular.
Yeah. That I know a lot of ball peen hammers that could fit in purses. But I think if I'm told to go ghost hunting and told that the tin is going to protect me against ghosts, if, you know, things really go pear-shaped, she'd be more inclined to have it on her just in case. Like, without the primer of all this, I think she might think that she'd be messed with. But knowing that she's like in this magical world now, you gotta look out for these things. She probably try to like ask like a bunch of questions and like study up before her first ghost finding mission. So like what do I do if I see one? Do I ignore it? Do I like wave? Do I talk to it? Do I run away?
Well, unless you're actively trying to be able to interact with it, it will not automatically notice you. Remember, it does take some effort of your mana to do that, instead of, you know, simply being visible to it by standing there, if you're not actively casting any of your magic. But looking at first is a very safe thing. And seeing what you can learn without interacting. All ghosts have bands and banes, like spirits. They have something that they have a hard time dealing with, and they have some kind of a weakness, as well as something that they're anchored to in the world to keeping them around. These are all things that you can learn by working on knowing magic.
So, hearing all this, I think Che's going to like pick a place known, like I think walking around in the cemetery is a bit too on the nose for it, but I think she might like walk along roadways, on the sidewalk, places where car accidents tend to happen, like, you know, that she knows a lot locally, is like, so that that one turn that gets really icy in the winter, she might walk around there, or like in front of like a old folks home, and just like, you know, be prepared to see it before she turns the death sight on.
Technically on page 180, there's a spell called No Spirit. I'm pretty sure you can do a version of that that would work for ghosts as well. And I think it's a bit of an oversight that the game where designers didn't actually pop one in the book. So if you want to use that as a guide, that is the kind of thing you could use to try and gain information about ghosts. You could also study them with focused mage sight, though doing that is more likely to get the ghost's attention that you can see it. But it will also tend to give you a wider range of information if you succeed.
Yeah.
Like if you catch a ghost taking a nap and you stare at it for a long time with mage sight, you'll be able to get a bunch of knowledge.
I think that's kind of like the lens Emily thinks, like turn on the mage sight and wait for, I'm not sure if it's waiting or like actively casting or whatever, but insist that the ghost give information, like not anything verbal, but sort of like the same way she would stare at her car and wait for the wheels to say, hey, I'm out of alignment by just noticing it. I think that's how it would manifest to her. Like, I do like that no spirit use case.
Yeah, I think that's honestly a perfect template, especially because there aren't any knowing spells in the for death one.
Yeah, so she's like in observer mode. She's not going to like go up and ask them, but basically just kind of like, you know, fly casual around these like spots that she's picked out for, you know, ghost busting. And like do some recon, sort of like, you know, just walk around, pretend that she can't see them, but then like give them like the blue steel sit there and try to like pick up the same way she got a read from other like physical properties.
Yeah. I like that she's actively going to be doing this in a little bit of her spare time. It definitely counts as a fair and reasonable kind of training, I would say. We're not going to give it any too many immediate effects that'll have happened in the downtime-ish, but we will definitely let it help in our, when we're getting back into uptime, I think.
Yeah, so like just something weird, like she does that, gets really confident at one point, like maybe like a ghost notices her noticing.
Yeah, and at that point in time, she would try to cast a quick veiling spell because she does have death too, to be like, yeah, ghost, stop noticing me. Yeah, you'd only have 3 dice to do that as an instant action, and it only lasts for like a turn or two, unless you take some risks to do something that would make it last longer. But it was a very important, quick initial lesson.
Yeah, and I think that's like appropriate for like a downtime reconnoiter mission, just to like get in, get out, and if you're noticed, practice getting out of there.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Are we ready to bring Shay back into uptime then?
Shay is ready. She was born ready.
All right. Because I feel like it's going to be a very excellent trope for Shay. Shall we start with when you were driving?
I mean, that's a big portion of her day most days.
Yeah. Oh.
She's definitely going around in our car. It's probably running better than she's ever had it since she's owned it. You know, probably takes her sunglasses off, her stuff, Clifford seat-belted into the passenger seats, and just riding around with her iced coffee, doing, you know, just daily commuter pickups and drop-offs.
All right. Well, what's kind of interesting is one client you get at a, let's just say one of the local colleges, actually, not your college, but one of the actual full-size colleges. Now, at the state college, when you're getting a student from there, because that is still one of your better places to go, they like to go with you instead of the buses sometimes, especially when they're heading downtown for the stores or the clubs or something like that. You notice something very unusual. You've been glancing at them randomly with your mage sight on every now and then.
As you do.
Especially if you're Che. Yeah. And a woman gets into the car with you, a girl maybe like 2 or 3 years older than you, probably a senior to your freshman at the state school. You look at her in the mirror as you're pulling off, and he certainly didn't get in with her, but there is a boy a couple years younger than her, maybe your age, beside her in the other seat. And he just seems to be glaring daggers at her and muttering under his breath. And he looks both incredibly angry and incredibly hateful. He's also wearing a tuxedo.
And this is something I noticed while having my mage sight on.
Yeah, he didn't show up before that moment.
Can I do one of those like blink it's off, blink it's back on again things?
Yep, especially because with your ruling sight, you can do it on and off pretty quickly, and you can't really leave it on without making a serious effort for more than a minute anyway.
So does he like disappear then reappear?
Oh yeah, he's only there with your mage sight.
And, oh gosh, I should have taken distracted driving as my specialty. But, he's like, is his like anger directed at this other girl?
Oh yeah, he seems to be like really pissed.
Is it possible to get like a read on what like his intentions might be?
So I'm doing a really quick rules look up for you right now. You can see him, but you can't hear him yet. If you want a empathy roll, wits and empathy.
Yeah.
Sorry, something went down the wrong pipe.
No worries. Okay. That's six dice. I'm not sure if active listening works if I can't hear him. Hot dog, that's three successes.
He absolutely hates her and wants her to suffer.
Where did she just like ask me to drop her off downtown by a club or a store or something? Or
by the downtown shopping areas.
Hmm. And he wants
there's a couple of clubs in that area too that are, you know, like restaurant by day, restaurant and club by, or like restaurant by afternoon, restaurant and club, but when they open up the back room at night kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Is there like a way to kind of like drive her there, let her out, but like magically restrain this guy from getting out with her?
Let's take a really quick glance at how far Death 2 lets you work with a ghost. I think it's Death 3 to actually command one, technically. Well, I think we can probably treat it pretty similar to how mind and spirit work. You can probably do a minimal bit of commanding, but you can't do a bit of trapping with two dots.
Yeah, like my thought was like kind of drive her to the wherever she wanted, let her get out, but somehow like restrain him and drive away. So at least like she has a chance to like go off and do something, and I don't know, maybe fate would make it so that like his plans are interrupted or something, because I'm not sure if I could actually like do anything about it, but I think I could at least like physically move him enough for like time to alter her plans and his, because he got in my car. If he wanted to just like go there, he would just gone there. So I'm thinking like it has to do with time and place. So if I could just keep him in my car, then drive away.
Okay, that's your plan right now?
Yeah.
You have the option of doing any kind of knowing spells you want on him as well, potentially.
Oh, so I'm going to try to do that thing where I, like I did with the previous ghost that I saw. I'm assuming it works the same way, where I just kind of like stare at it and like try to read into things I can know about it.
All right, well, the easiest thing, you either do the knowing him or you do the sensing communicating with ghost spell, which mostly duplicates what your mage sight can do, but also tells you about things like anchors, which are what the ghosts bind themselves to, or potentially let you speak to a ghost even if they don't understand your language.
Yeah, and I don't want to, I was thinking about just communicating, but I don't want to like weird out the girl while she's just in the car with me.
Yeah, because she will hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
And she won't see him.
Yeah, I don't want her to think I'm crazy and like report me or something. Like, oh, I don't want to get fired from my gig job because I got a bad customer review or something. Which it's silly, but like I figure the less that she knows or is involved with it, the better. So I'm gonna try to first read what I can about him as silently as I can, because I am a whisper after all.
All right. What are you gonna try and use for a yantra while you're driving?
Mm-hmm. I think I have an automatic, thank God. So I think I'm like kind of like I have like my purse on the front seat, maybe it's open, one hand on the wheel, one hand just kind of goes in and like touches the head of the hammer of it to kind of like get some of that magic moth energy, and maybe kind of just like kind of whisper out like the things that I want to read off of them.
Okay, so remember, you can only use so many yantras at once.
Okay.
But You knew that. And each one takes effectively a turn. We're going to make a turn slightly longer than a combat level turn right here for obvious reasons, I think.
I feel like I have at least 10 minutes to drive from a college to a shopping mall.
There. Oh, yeah. At least 20, I'd say.
Yeah.
Though you don't want to be too obvious
either. Yeah, and I also don't want to crash the car.
Mm-hmm. So it's fine that you are taking your time and probably not leaving Mage Light on for the entire time of this.
Yeah.
Because you can only be, like, again, about 1 minute at a time at most without spending willpower. Yeah.
Maybe I concentrate on this, like, when I've stopped at a red light or something.
I think that sounds very appropriate. So, you stop at a red light, you're going to use a hammer. The hammer is your plus two. And you're going to kind of do your intent, so that's plus three dice. Now let's go over what you're going to need to cast this spell. You get one reach on it without taking any potential paradox. That one reach has to be spent to use it as an instant spell instead of 3 hours. If you take more reach, you potentially start accruing paradox. Each reach you do gives you one die of paradox. The first two are canceled out by your hammer and turned into a chance die.
Okay. So I got two from the hammer. I got two from death.
One from Gnosis and one from your whispers.
One from my whispers. So that's six dice.
Now, let's see what you want to do for modifiers, okay? To be able to learn about him, you probably got to beat his rank as a spirit. So you need a minimum of one success, unless you think he's a higher rank than one. He might be a two, for example, so you might need two successes. Also, unless you're putting some dice into taking longer duration, this is only going to last for one turn. So you'd either have to take dice penalties with two dice to add in one turn for each extra dice, you know, you take out of your pool, or you'd have to use a reach to go to advanced duration and make it last for a whole scene. And then you start having that small chance of paradox.
I mean, like, does the knowing of all these things happen instantaneously? Is it something I need more time for?
This is your knowing, right? Not your sticking him around spell. So you actually do have two reach available. So it's how long you have to look at him for.
Okay, so then I'm up to seven dice to just know about him first?
No. It doesn't change your dice pool. It changes how many reach you can apply.
Okay, so this is reach two with six dice then.
Right.
Okay.
One reach turns it in an instant.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have one more reach, so you could either use that reach to do something like have a spell last for longer or affect bigger areas or stuff like that.
All right, let's have it last like instant and scene for just the knowing.
Okay, well, no, I mean, you know, information, it's not going to take you longer. If things change while you're looking at him, that would make sense, I guess.
Okay,
because it's not the holding him in place spell. Sorry.
All right.
So, that will give you knowledge. Every success you get above his rank will give you a piece of information.
Okay.
And you can take dice out of your pool for automatic additional successes if you get a single success.
Okay.
It's a death two spell, and it's death one spell, and it's a potency based spell. So if you get one success, you are technically get a total of two.
Okay, if it's difficulty 8, I don't necessarily want to take a bunch of dice out.
Yeah, it's basically the gamble of, well, if I take dice out and I get one success, I get more automatically, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to stick
with... A lot of the mage stuff is about balancing your dice pool, because three dice usually means one success.
Yeah, I feel like I don't know a whole lot about either the system or him to do anything, so I think I'm just going to leave the dice in, and I might have to play with it to get him to stay or do something else once I have more information about him.
All right, so six dice, and you're rolling to try and get more successes than his rank.
Yep. All right, here we go. God damn, that's three successes again.
All right, and that will give you one question. basically.
What are you planning to do to this woman?
All right, I was going to go with the question, actually. Like, what's its rank? What's its anchor? What kind of power does it have? What's its weakness? Stuff like that. Basic qualities of it.
Okay, so it's quality. I'm not asking a question.
You're not going in its mind. You're learning qualities about it.
Okay, so thinking, what do I know about ghosts and spirits so far? I know that there are certain things anchor them to this world. I don't know. Like, I have a feeling it's a fairly low. If I got three successes and I get one question, that means it's probably rank two.
Right. So technically, you don't realize it's rank two without having spent a question on that.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the unfortunate meta of how these dice work.
I know. It's not that I know what that even means.
You
know,
yeah, and I probably should have rolled in secret in retrospect, but whatever.
Yeah. I can go with what's its weakness? Because even if its anchor was something that woman possessed, what am I going to do? Take her purse or something?
Its weakness is surgical implements.
I'm trying to think like what that could possibly mean. I think this is like the first time I kind of ask a question sort of like this. Like, it was just probably like superficial stuff of my initial ghost busting attempts. So the fact that like I get like such an off the wall answer like that, I think kind of like throws Che off her game a little bit, because that's very specific.
Yeah, ghosts should be weird.
I like that, but I'm not sure if I have any surgical equipment in my car or even what I would do.
Well, technically, you also have a hammer that's the weakness of almost any ghost to begin
with. Yeah.
But that doesn't have to show up in public.
Yeah.
All right. You figure that out at the stoplight, and then you move on, and you're left with that question. Oh, you got the chance to do the one more spell before she gets out.
I think I want to try to, like, keep it here somehow.
All right. We can call that a commanding ghost thing, just treating it the same as the command spirit spell.
Yeah.
That's a death too, so you only have one reach on it.
Okay.
And you got to beat its rank again in successes.
Mm-hmm.
That one reach has to go towards making it an instant cast under the circumstances.
Correct.
And you're going to use the same tools as last time, I'm thinking.
Yeah. So it's the same dice pool then.
It is the same dice pool. But if you're going to want to make it last longer than a turn, you're going to have to take the one reach, which means you get a chance die for paradox.
I think I'm going to have to resist that, because like if I don't stop this guy or arrest it, or at least give her some more time to get away, then like something bad's going to happen. I have this feeling. So I'm going to like wait until like she's getting out of the car to cast it. Like, I'm guessing she's like either like not paying any attention to me or like playing on her phone. Because I don't think I was like at all a conversationalist during this ride.
She was probably on her phone, to be fair.
Yeah. And so
a one reach gives you one scene, which is like the equivalent of at least an hour.
Mm-hmm.
What would your command be to make sure that he doesn't follow her? Would it be something like
stay in my car, in
the back seat, or in the car?
Stay in the back seat, because that seems more specific.
That's why I asked the specific question.
Yeah, nope. Stay in the back seat.
Okay, so you're going to roll that, and you got to beat his rank.
Okay, I'm not gonna pull any dice for automatic success, because I feel like I need this to happen. I feel like taking dice out lowers that success, the chance. Oh, dropped one. All right. Well, I got one success. Is there like,
and I rolled the paradox in advance technically, so, but there weren't any successes on a chance slide, so we don't have to worry about that right now.
Okay,
so you have one success, and then you have one additional success because you're at death two.
Okay.
Because remember how we talked about that? So,
mm-hmm.
that's just enough to beat his rank.
Okay.
She gets out of the car. He's still in the back seat as you pull away and starting to look confused and a little panic. Like, why am I doing this?
Uh-huh. And, like, I'm gonna, like, I'm not gunning it, but I'm hastily getting out of the area and going, like, in a direction that, like, I could cover more distance, not necessarily, like going a certain, like, way. I'm not going to, like, go through streets. I'm going to try to get on the highway and go, or just get as far as away as I can in the initial moments, just to give her more time up front, because I don't know how long this might even last. But then, like, as I'm going, I'm going to, like, flip the sights on, and I'm going to say, can I talk to him?
If you spend the mana, you can talk to him without rolling any dice, but mm-hmm. he can also talk to and interact with you.
What do you mean by interact?
You can touch him, he can touch you.
I might try to get away and get out of the car before trying to do something then. And can I just, like, drive to, I don't know, like, a hospital?
You can drive to the parking lot of a hospital. There is one in Bangor. You can drive to the nearest parking garage. There's a big one near downtown Bangor.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to, like, I don't know what I'm doing.
You can drive to a park?
Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. But he doesn't know that I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm trying to think of where can I go to get hospital equipment and surgical stuff. And just, like kind of use it to intimidate him a little bit. Or just, like,
say... The hammer should intimidate him too, you know.
Oh, actually, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to... We're driving, and I'm going to, like... He probably perceives me at some level. I'm going to basically pick up the hammer, pull it out of the purse, and start just, like, fingering the moth on it. And have my mage sight on, and just kind of, like, wait for some sort of reaction.
You're getting a little bit of nerves there. Are you going to spend the point of mana to be able to talk after a little bit?
After a little bit, I'm gonna just, like, keep looking up into the thing and, like, try to get him to sweat it out. Like, maybe he notices me noticing him. I'm not saying anything yet, but I'm just, like, driving occasionally.
He looks like he's starting to curse a little bit in your general direction instead of hers. He seems mm-hmm. to be getting really frustrated right now. So he was frustrated the whole car ride. Mm-hmm. He was confused when he couldn't leave. And now he's feeling really frustrated.
Yeah. I don't personally feel like I have enough experience or knowledge to fight this guy, but I feel like he doesn't know that. But I think I'm going to go to, yeah, I like a park or, like, a field or somewhere, like grasslands. Maybe there's, like a beach or something. It's New England. There's probably lakes or, like, the ocean. And it's definitely not beach weather. So maybe I'll go to...
You are an hour from the ocean.
Oh.
Which is where Deerston is. But you are very close to the river that leads you there because it goes through Bangor.
Yeah. Let's go to, like, I don't know, like a... Like an unpopulated place with, like, the river or, like, a park or something.
All right. There's certainly more than, like, one little park around the river. And probably coming on a weekday, you're not likely to have too much traffic there.
Mm-hmm.
So you go to a slightly underused park in a mm-hmm. slightly quieter area.
Yeah.
Within a reasonable drive by the river.
Yeah. Once I'm no longer driving, I'm going to get out with my hammer. Open up the passenger, the back door where he is. And now I'm going to spend my mana to talk with him and say, are we going to have any problems?
And that's about where we hit our time for the night. A perfect cutoff.
Oh shit. Cause he doesn't know I'm just bluffing right now, but I'm like scared out of my mind, but like, I couldn't just like, I don't know what he's trying to do, but it didn't seem great.
And
Want to find out more about the story? Join our Discord channel. The link is in the description.